July 28th, 2019, we talked about the original Spider-Man movie that came out in 2002 starring Tobey Maguire. We thought it was an okay movie in a time where superhero films were in a transitional period. We didn't love it, but that could have been because its sequel is regarded as one of the best superhero movies of the time. Is Spider-Man 2 featuring Doc Ock better than the first movie? Let's talk about it right now on another exciting episode of A Cast of the Past, publishing a brand new episode every Sunday. We talk about video games, we talk about movies, and if you enjoy our conversations, consider leaving a five-star review on your favorite podcast app of choice. My name is Juan Velez. I am from Puerto Rico. Joining me, as always, we got from Boston, Massachusetts, Ryan McNulty. Ryan, immediately, I want to get your feedback. What did you think, my friend, of Spider-Man 2?
So Spider-Man 2, I thought, was still a really good movie. It's been a while since I had seen it, so I was unsure how it was going to hold up given how much the superhero genre has evolved since then. But I think it definitely holds up. Is it as good as some of the newer movies of today? Probably not, but it's definitely a great movie that's still worth watching.
And we have from London, Ontario, Keith M. Poshik. Now, Keith, in your case, we talked about the fact that the first one definitely didn't have the MCU magic that we've grown used to. What did you think about this one? Did it feel like it maybe had a different tone or style in comparison to the first one?
You know, going into this one, I was a little confused by the fact, and you mentioned at the beginning of the show that this one is regarded as the best one. So I went in with that notion of, is this actually better than Spider-Man 1? Because I don't remember it being better. And after watching it, I feel strongly that I was correct, that I don't think that this is a better movie than Spider-Man 1. It's a good superhero movie, but I think Spider-Man 1's better. The stuff in it that I really enjoyed. And as far as comparing it to the MCU, my big takeaway from this movie is just kind of how spoiled we are these days by superhero movies, because comparing this to what we have today, I would almost call it a bad movie.
I think that's part of it, though, because just to bring up Rotten Tomatoes, for those that maybe haven't watched these movies, and obviously Rotten Tomatoes review website, the first Spider-Man movie, 2002, got a 90%, which is incredible.
No slouch at all.
Yeah.
For a superhero movie, even.
Yeah, but the second one, 94. So 90%,
yeah, see, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's usually already high, but it got 94, and then the third one dropped down to 63, which, let's be real, considering how much fun people have made fun of the third movie, 63, it ain't even bad. It's not like Batman Forever categories of bad. But Keith, in your case, when you went into this movie, was it maybe Doc Ock? You know, we got Green Goblin on the first movie, right? So I think, like, we should establish the clear differences where the first one was an origin story, but this one, we already know, you know, what Peter Parker is, Spider-Man is. We saw the death of the Green Goblin in the first one. And in this one, we're introduced to Doc Ock, Dr. Otto Octavius, but then we also have Harry into the mix that wants to get that revenge on Spider-Man. So I think this movie does a much better job of just jumping into the story, where the first one definitely takes its time, but it is the origin. Did you like that about this movie, though, considering we got everything else out of the way, or was that just something that you didn't really love still?
I actually really did enjoy it, but to a degree. Like, you mentioned Doc Ock is the villain in this one. I liked him. He was my favorite part of the movie. The thing that really bothered me about it was the fact it took all of the bad things from Spider-Man 1 and just continued them.
That's a good example.
The best example, in my opinion, is how Peter Parker can't do anything right. They beat that to absolute death in this movie.
It's a sequel, Keith. They got to do more of it.
And boy, do they ever, to the point where it was the scene with the at the gallery where Peter was taking pictures and just couldn't get an hors d'oeuvre, kept reaching, and it was always gone. By that point, it was like, okay, I get it. He can't do anything right. Do we really need to do this for the 18th time? And that was a big part of the first movie that I really didn't like, and they just doubled down on that. And I think that's kind of where my lack of enjoyment comes from, where they just kind of continued the worst parts of the movies and then didn't really do enough for the best parts. Like, in my opinion, not completing the Harry storyline in this movie and saving it for a third was a very poor mistake, and history kind of proved that to be correct with 3 as well.
Well, Ryan, I mean, what do you think about that in terms of just double dipping on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of factors with the Harry storyline that made it not work in Spider-Man 3, but we will get there. Honestly, Keith has a valid point about the whole Peter Parker can't do anything right. When it's the pizza delivery and he's coming out of the broom closet and
how
putting
did he
them
get
all
in that broom closet, by the way?
Well, he was Side changing because he was in the Spider-Man costume.
So but he went up the elevator, like... There was no
Damn
windows
Keith,
there.
I'm trying to make a point here.
It's really, yeah, that make really point, I'm sorry, that really bothered me. There
Is
was
that
no
much
windows.
Of a logistical gap to you that
yes.
maybe snuck by the secretary to go into the closet.
If
anyway.
You're wearing a human spider outfit, yes.
Maybe, but he's stealthy, man. So what I was saying is, at the beginning, that was funny. And like you said, by the end of the movie, that is a little played out. So totally with you there. I don't think that at all ruins this movie. I think this movie did a better job of being less hokey and over the top cartoony, which was probably my biggest criticism of the first one. Oh, don't get me wrong. It's still got that cartooniness in a lot of places, but they definitely tone that down. Doc Ock is a much more grounded, realistic villain than the Green Goblin was, and it takes a lot less hoops they have to jump through to kind of justify his existence, whereas like Green Goblin, you get we're selling all this crap to the military, and you get to have the military guys in here, where Doc Ock's just a scientist, and his like tentacle things are just his equipment to do this experiment that he's trying
controlling
to accomplish.
His mind.
Yeah, the biggest leap for me in Doc Ock is just like, what is robot arms and taking the world? Like, why do robot arms want to take over the world? Why are they manipulating him? What are the robot arms' motivations? That's the only weird thing. But other than that, I think this did so many things better than the first one. It was just overall much more solid, and I think all the story threads just worked a lot better. Harry's is a little weak, I'll admit. And I get some problems with Mary Jane and her whole situation, but I figure we can get into that a little later. That's just kind of my overall analysis.
Yeah, and when talking about these movies, we're always going to be referencing this universe, because obviously there are going to be differences between this and the comic books. And if you haven't, we did review the first one, so you can check it out, whether it be on podcast archives or on the YouTube channel. But first, dissecting the character of Peter Parker, I think what you said, Keith, is true. It's like the entire movie, as I was writing notes, it's like, how many times can you mess up? Like that scene where Mary Jane gets proposed to. It's like, not only did you mess up Peter Parker, you're also taking a picture of the girl. But then at the end of the movie, they kind of just make up. I feel it's like you spent so much time in this movie and in the first one, right? So we're talking about rounded up around 2 hours of just a character messing up, only to then conveniently have everything solved at the end. And I always thought that romantic angle with John and Mary Jane, it just made no sense, because he played second fiddle to the entire thing. But moving back, the main character of this movie is going to be Doc Ock, right? You talked about him, Ryan. I thought that he was my favorite character. And much like Thanos, I think characters like these work because at the end of the day, they're very humanized, right? You can listen to them and it's like, yeah, you're a bad person, but I can see the intentions. Now, the way they went about it with him, I thought it was cheap, like you mentioned, Ryan. So you have like these claws, but the person's actually good, but then he just conveniently put in this little tiny sensor that could easily be broken in the back of his neck just so they don't do that. Guess what? Oh my goodness, it blows up. So
it
then
was one
that
line.
Happens.
If they cut out one line in that movie, that line about like, oh, doctor, if these are as advanced as you say, then couldn't they control you? If they just cut that out, took it out completely and just would have been about the fact that he just lost his wife and his life's work and went crazy, would have been way better.
Yeah, especially because if it had become like an obsessive thing, that I think that would have mattered a lot more. But the fact that it's like, oh no, he's not actually a bad person, it's that these claws are manipulating him, that took away from the character. Because imagine like if there was a scenario where his wife once again died, but it became a revenge story of like, my wife died, so I have to see it through. You know, it cost her
exactly.
life, and he became obsessed with seeing this come to fruition. You would have been like, damn, like, you messed up and you kind of killed your wife, but there's something commendable to you wanting to see the scientific experiment, be completed. What do you think about the interaction with Doc Ock and Peter Parker, the student that's messing up? And he kind of takes him under his wing for a little bit and advising him.
I always appreciate that in Spider-Man, it always seems that they do a good job of having the villain be someone who Peter Parker interacts with kind of beforehand, or they have some sort of relationship. Granted, in this case, not nearly to the same degree as the Green Goblin, with it being, it's Harry's the son. Norman Osborn. Yeah. Okay. So in this case, it was cool to see Peter Parker kind of, you know, since he's a science nerd, they're kind of bouncing off each other, and then sure enough, things go haywire later. But I also like that in this movie, I kind of agree with you guys where the whole motivation of him being evil is a little thrown off. But it's nice that Green Goblin kind of had a problem of, I'm a bad guy, I'm going to do bad things, it's fun to do bad things or whatever. And Doc Ock was like, he didn't really mess with Spider-Man. He was just trying to do his experiment. It wasn't really until Harry basically put a hit out on him that Doc Ock really cared about trying to go after Spider-Man. I mean, they interacted before at the bank and everything, but that wasn't like what he was after. He just wanted to get his money, which, first of all, I just want to bring this up. Why did Doc Ock need to rob a bank? Couldn't, like, if you're going to steal stuff, wouldn't it just be easier to steal the things you need than to rip open a bank vault and steal money? So I just like that he was like,
and now he was able to easily buy everything after stealing all that money.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nobody traced those transactions
right?
at all.
Right? Who
or
cares?
Just like, can you imagine if like he goes, robs a bank, gets all this money. So now what is he just going to regularly walk into each place that he needs to and just regularly purchase all
these
giant
robot arms?
He's got these giant arms stuck to him. It's like, oh, yep, I'll take, you know, bag of Doritos and some science equipment. Thanks. Thank you very much. Like, I just thought that was a little weird that it's like, dude, just, you got robot arms, go out and steal your science stuff and then do your experiment.
If something reminds me, like, I think a big difference between the MCU movies and this is that the MCU movies do try to have some time with not just the superhero, but the antagonist. Here, if you notice, we see a format with Green Goblin and Doc Ock, which is introduce them, establish something, and almost just have them be to the side because the movie's about Peter Parker. At some point, it's like, oh my goodness, the thing just happens to be built. Like, I thought there was so much that could have been done with Doc Ock because I love the actor and I love the character. But he kind of just goes away in favor of Peter, you're miserable. Peter, guess what?
He was in the movie a lot less than I remembered. I thought he was in the movie more.
Because if you notice, you can almost point out, it's like there's Doc Ock before the arms, then there's Doc Ock when he's in the building phase, and then there's the fight scenes. But really, there's not a lot more about like, what is his motivation aside from let's finish this? I feel like there could have been a lot more threats around the world. Like, the New York or the equivalent of New York could be about to be destroyed, but nobody is threatened by this. And I feel like we've talked about this previously. And whenever that happens, I'm not a big fan of it in movies because it's like you can do so much more with the emotions, which takes me then to the reason why This was not the case. So Peter got fed up. Peter began losing his superpowers because he sucked as Peter Parker. He was a pretty dang good Spider-Man, but as the result of a lot of things happening on a personal level, it seems like the spider webs, which remember, these are not equipped. They're actually part of his physical human body. They start to go away. He starts to lose the superpowers, goes to a doctor, and the doctor basically tells him, hey, it's all up in your head. So he decides to hang it up as Spider-Man. What did you guys think about the fact that in the first one, we establish him, but in here, like a good 30 to 40% of the movie, we take Spider-Man out, which to begin with, there's not a lot of Spider-Man in the movie. When you think about it, it's still like Peter Parker featuring Spider-Man. Starting with Keith, what you think of that?
Honestly, if they did a little bit of a better job making me care about the Peter Parker character, besides being a bumbling oaf, I think this would have hit a little harder. Because, I mean, it is the part two in a trilogy, and usually that's the quote-unquote dark middle chapter, and this was their rendition of it. But the fact that we'd spent most of this movie building up that he just bumbles around and can't really do anything right, it was really hard to get into, like, feel bad for him, basically. Like, okay, you suck at Peter Parker, you can't pull it off, so why not just go be Spider-Man? Like, I get you're losing your powers, but okay.
I actually like this. I could get past bumbling idiot Peter Parker and realize that this movie is not really about Spider-Man versus Doc Ock. This is really just about Peter Parker struggling with...
It's Spider-Man versus Peter Parker.
It's Spider-Man. Exactly. It's Peter Parker versus himself, really, and trying to find the balance of being Spider-Man and also trying to get the things he wants out of his life as Peter Parker. And he does a really bad job at it for a while, and then is able to give up Spider-Man for a time to try and be a better Peter Parker. And he does accomplish that for a while, but then I think they do a very good job with, you know, you see the look on Peter's face when he realizes, you know, if he's not Spider-Man, then, like, basically lives are just going to be lost on his, you know, on his account, essentially. You know, he saves that girl from a burning building, but then, you know, they realize somebody else from that building also died. And you can just see in Peter Parker's face, like, I should have saved that person. Someone died because I wasn't able to step in and do what I normally do. So he realizes, you know, if you have this power and you don't do anything, that's almost as bad as just, you know, doing nothing at all. I don't know how to word that, but you know what I mean? Like, to have that power and to not use it is just, like, it's just going to weigh on you, and you're basically partly responsible for whatever happens in a way, which, yeah, the whole great power, great responsibility, they say it all the time, but it's, I think you see it in effect when you don't use that power.
I think something that I saw with this movie is that it was a better Spider-Man movie, but we got a worse Peter Parker. And I'm not going to say it's a blame on the script.
I really don't think he was worse, to be honest. But go ahead.
Hear me out.
I'm with you there. That's a good description.
Hear me out. I think that what was written in the script was good, but knowing Tobey Maguire's acting abilities outside of Spider-Man, having watched Seabiscuit and other movies, he's a very limited actor.
Playing the Seabiscuit card.
Yeah. From Seabiscuit to Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire story.
But I think he has, like, the dumb-looking face and, like, the neutral-looking face. And with this movie,
yes.
Like, if I got to hang out, think about all the powers that I have, all the superpowers that I have. I'm Spider-Man. I am literally saving people from death, but at the expense of my own life. I would get pissed off. I would get frustrated. And his emotions never peaked. I felt like he kind of just gave up on everything. And it's like, come on, man. Your freaking aunt is losing her house. We're talking about the fact that your best friend wants to kill the superhero version of yourself. You're not able to be with the girl that you want to be because, you know, the responsibility, and you don't want her to die. Your freaking uncle died because you wanted to get revenge on a guy. I'd be pissed off. And this is not Juan. This is basic human emotions. And it felt like they just went, well, it can't be too serious, but at the same time, even the best comedy has like its really dark moments. So you end up laughing even more. And it never plateaued. It never had that peak. If you're talking about like, it's always commonly referred to, movies are like a roller coaster of emotions. There was no roller coaster here. It felt like this is the kiddie park. This is the Harry Potter kiddie ride. That's like, it's kind of going up, but not too much really. So Keith, why do you seem to agree with me on that?
Honestly, you just worded it perfectly where you said it is a great Spider-Man movie and a bad Peter Parker movie. And I think that's what I don't like about it the most. The fact that the Peter Parker portion of it just takes up so much of it and takes away from the Spider-Man, because everything that I enjoy about the movie are the parts with Spider-Man, CGI aside, because hey, we were still figuring it out at this point. But those parts with like Spider-Man versus Doc Ock and the dialogue stuff with Dr. Octavius, those are really good. That's some good superhero movie. But once you start getting into the Peter Parker Mary Jane stuff, the Peter Parker Aunt May stuff, and the description of Tobey Maguire's emotional range, that's like, it does a lot with it. And one of those moments where I was like, okay, get on with it, was the whole Peter Parker confessing to Aunt May what happened, but Toby didn't have exactly like the saddest face that he could put on, in my opinion. And it was another one of those things that fell flat. So it just,
I actually thought that was good.
Yes.
I thought that scene worked for me,
but so it's, like it was a sad face, but it was the same sad face he had put on for the rest of the movie. Like there was no extra weight to confessing that you're basically the reason that your uncle died. And all of that kind of took away from the movie. And I think that's why I like the first one more, because even though that's prominent there, it's less.
I'm honestly sitting here surprised, because I feel like everything you guys are saying was worse in the first movie. I thought both Peter Parker and Mary Jane, like Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, I thought they were better in this movie in terms of acting. I thought they improved. The only one who probably fell flat for me in like who really stood out that I didn't think was particularly great was James Franco in this
yes.
one.
Nobel Prize, Ock.
Yeah,
Nobel Prize.
Yeah, he was not great. And it's funny to see, because James Franco, we know today, I think he's so much better, you know, but he was young back then, whatever. Yeah, everyone else I thought was much better in comparison to the first movie. So I guess I just don't see it. Sure, Tobey Maguire's acting range, I'll throw you a bone there. Like, I don't think it was out of this world, but it was enough for me to feel what was going on in each scene. And I liked the character story that they told in this movie. Like I said, do I think it is better than some of the newer movies today? No, but if we're talking like pre-Nolan superhero movie era, I think this is the best movie basically before we get into Batman Begins, etc. Like, I think this is the best superhero movie up until that point.
No, and something I wanted to say, and I'm happy that we now have a backlog of movies, Fargo. So we reviewed Fargo. You can check it out in the archives. And I was watching this movie and thinking, what's another movie where the character is like bad luck after situation, but unlike for me where I don't like Peter Parker, I love that. And we talked about Fargo, and universally we loved it, despite the fact that when you boil it down, it's a story of this guy sucks. Jerry sucks. It was literally the episode of our podcast, right? But what made it work there, I think it's that if your life sucks, go all in. It's like you want to triple dip in that.
It's
and,
true.
And just to be clear for me, Ryan, like I think that Tobey Maguire did a bad Peter Parker in both, and he did do a better one with this one. But it's just like for me, and the fact that we have had Tom Holland, the fact that we have seen other superhero movies, and you mentioned Batman Begins, you know, you have the story of Christian Bale, the story of Bruce Wayne, where his parents die, right? So
tomato,
there's a
tomato.
Negative thing, but he uses that as motivation. And I think it's just that it's going to cater to different tastes. Maybe somebody loves the goofy nature. So for everybody watching and listening, do you think, yes or no, Do you think that Tobey Maguire is objectively a good Peter Parker? We're not talking about Spider-Man. We're talking about Peter Parker, the human being. And I do want to get to now one of the other main characters, which is Mary Jane. Starting with Ryan, what did you think about the other side of the story? In many ways, the reason Peter is frustrated is because he can't be with her, right? She's frustrated. He's disappointing her time after time in the movie. And Kirsten Dunst, I think that as opposed to Toby, she does a great job, right? But she's a naturally great actress. She's been involved in a lot of stuff. What do you think about her performance?
Performance, I thought she was fine. It wasn't anything out of this world, but I thought it was much improved from Spider-Man 1. Her as a character, I find very frustrating. Again, we kind of have that, just to harken back to Spider-Man 1, it's really like a weird conveying of the relationship between Peter Parker and Mary Jane, where they're apparently best friends now, and they've been best friends for years, when Spider-Man 1 really did not tell that story at all. But her character,
because,
I think,
just to confirm, at the beginning of Spider-Man 1, she didn't know who he was, right?
Sort of. But then she does, but she doesn't. Yeah, it's really weird how they handle that. But just looking directly at this movie, I think they're trying to play this, oh, like when she's ready to be in a relationship, Peter's not, and vice versa. And I could see people being like, oh, you know, you get this like Jim and Pam situation, to use a more modern example, I guess. And it's more frustrating. You're not like, oh, I want them to get together. You're just like, oh, these people are ridiculous. Like, can't they get their shit straight, essentially? It's more frustrating in that way than like, oh, I want to see them be together. And then to me, the part where I just really don't have any sympathy at all for Mary Jane is just how, like, nonchalant she is about marrying this other dude.
Yeah, it's a bit of a commitment here, folks.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, she's going to marry him, but then she's talking to Peter Parker, like, behind his back, basically talking, like, oh, about them being together. She's not at all taking this marriage thing seriously.
And she's never happy with the guy. Every time, she's got this look like, oh, my goodness, I'm going to marry him. Then why freaking marry
him? It's like, listen, Mary Jane, you know, the fact that you're even considering being with Peter Parker probably means that you should not get married to this other guy. Like, you don't have to be with somebody, but if you're like this, if you're this nonchalant about whether or not you want to get married to this guy, guess what? You probably shouldn't marry him. You know, even if you're not going to be with Peter Parker, you probably shouldn't marry this guy. Okay, this chick's just cold AF. Yeah. Like,
and people wonder why the divorce rate is so high.
No, for me, I felt like this, the fact that she was going to get married and Doc Ock's magical controller thing where, you know, the claws can control him, but then it breaks. Those are like the movie crutches. It's like, okay, people, so we need Mary Jane to continue progressing in her life, but she's already successful. So how can Peter get frustrated? Oh, she's going to get married, except we're not going to develop that at all. Like, who cares about the guy? She never wants him. And Doc Ock, great character. Oh, we're going to add this mind control thing, totally killing a good part of the character. So I think, once again, this is objectively for me in every way a better Spider-Man movie, because the Spider-Man character, from the action scenes to the villain to, even though there's not a ton of action scenes, we have iconic scenes, right? The train where he's grabbing everything, and then when people see him unmasked, but they're saying, you know, like, we won't tell, but then Doc Ock comes in. These are iconic things, whereas in the first one, we mentioned the fact that there is action, but not a lot of memorable moments. And I do think this movie did a much better job. Is there a particular standout moment for you guys in this movie that you loved?
I think the train scene has always stood out to me. When I think of this movie, that's usually what I think of. Also, the faces that Tobey Maguire makes when he's like holding onto those webs.
The are biggest just perfect, poop face.
Yeah, I was going to say they're perfect GIFs for a poop face text or whatever. But anyway, yeah. And I'm always like, man, it does look like he's legitimately like killing himself trying to hold this train back.
Or dropping a loaf.
Yeah. You see his suit tearing. And even I love when basically he's really getting ready to stop it, you're seeing like parts of the train also give way, like from the webs that he's holding it with. So that's always a great scene. And the fact that, you know, all the people are so appreciative, they're like, yeah, we're not going to give away your identity. Quick thing, there's a few funny cameos in this movie of people who have later kind of become a little bit more famous. The pizza guy was like Asif Manvi from The Daily Show. I totally did not see that coming. But on the train is a guy, I don't know if you've heard of Joey Diaz. He's a comedian. He's always on Joe Rogan's podcast and stuff all the time.
Is that the one that was up front?
He was the guy who was like the big guy who was like, you mess with us or whatever. Like, you got to go through us. And then Joel McHale was the banker, right, from Community. Oh, yeah. So I thought that was cool. A few little cameos of people who weren't quite famous then.
Mm-hmm. I do have to agree with you on the train scene being the standout moment of that movie. If you include the entire Spider-Man Doc Ock fight in there, I think that's what people look for in a Spider-Man movie. At least that's what I look for in just that great superhero action. And one thing I will give this movie credit for is the fact it continues the tradition from Spider-Man 1 of just great, amazing shots, intro shots for villains. It's a huge standout as well, up there with Willem Dafoe screeching on a table, that whole Dr. Octopus going out of the hospital and doing a Darth Vader like, no!
Oh, yeah.
Just that, these movies, I don't know why I never realized it, but they just knock it out of the park with how great those are in the worst way possible. I loved it. I almost like literally rolled over laughing with how stupid
this was pre-Revenge of the Sith, right? So
it was a flip that they got it off of this one.
People didn't laugh at it.
True.
So speaking of reactions, there was something about this movie that once I realized it kind of ruined it, and if nobody's noticed it, I am about to kill this movie for you. Think about how many times in this movie they, for no reason, do a random close-up of a person screaming.
Oh, I know. That's up there with the whole Peter Parker can't do anything right thing.
Yeah, like when Doc Ock breaks in one place, the building, right? Like the girl's running, literally runs towards the camera yelling. At one point, when Mary Jane gets kidnapped, there's a close-up. There, in almost any
that
action scene...
That freaking scene when Doc Ock is in the hospital getting, like, surgery done to him. Like, half of that scene is just close-ups of people going, ah!
Was I the only one that was laughing out loud while watching that part? I get it's supposed to be super serious, but for me, it's just like... There's so much yelling happening.
Why did nobody call the police?
You got to get those crowd reactions, all right? Maybe Kevin Dunn directed this movie.
Wow. So, the other thing. We talked about Mary Jane, talked about Doc Ock, but getting more into the character of Harry Osborn. We talked about James Franco, right? But we know that this movie is building up to its sequel, and it's very evident. It's very obvious that they're building towards, hey, it's eventually going to be Green Goblin 2.0 versus Spider-Man. What did you think about the whole revenge obsession that Harry has leading up to the scene in the bar where he's drunk and he slaps Peter in the face? And then we get the part where... For no reason. It's like, this just made no sense to me character-wise. So Doc Ock is like a super genius, goes to Harry, give me something. And then Harry just says, give me Peter. Okay, I'll just leave. Like, I'm not going to question it, or I could just kill you right now and force it out of you. But I'm just going to grab Peter Parker,
Peter,
reveal.
Well, all right, I'll defend it in the way that maybe Doc Ock, he doesn't know where it is, right? So even though it's in that vault, and I'm sure he could get to it, the thing is, yeah, maybe he just doesn't know where to find it, right? So he's just gonna, it's easier for him to go and find Spider-Man than it is for him to kill Harry and look all over Oscorp or wherever the hell to find Woody.
How come
needs.
He knew so, he was in a date with Mary Jane?
That's a good question. That is a legitimately good question there.
Not that easy, man.
But the whole Harry thread is definitely one of the weaker ones. But I think how it's put together is fine. I just think that James Franco was not at his best and didn't really sell it. But I do like the idea of Harry definitely has every reason to be pissed at Spider-Man and want revenge. And the things he's doing seem to make sense to me. I just think it wasn't sold great. And I actually really love how they set up the third movie. I thought that was really cool for him to just discover all of, Norman Osborn stuff, like all the Green Goblin stuff. And then you're like, oh man, I can't wait to see what happens. I remember seeing it in theaters and being super hyped about that. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Everything that happens after this movie aside, I still believe that they should have went a little farther with the Harry revenge story, because it left a bad taste in my mouth where they left it. Like, okay, he finds out that that Spider-Man's Peter Parker, he cries a little bit, and that's kind of the end of it. It made him look like a weak character. And going into the third one, at least this was for me, was thinking like, oh, okay, he can't hang against Spider-Man. Spider-Man's like at his tippity-top level, and then Harry is an emotional wreck. It didn't really seem like a very strong villain or strong foe going into this one. Like, maybe Harry starts figuring out the whole Green Goblin, Hobgoblin thing a little more and kind of gaining his confidence by the end of it. I just wish they would have taken it a little further. Not enough that it takes away from like the confrontation between Doc Ock and Spider-Man, but just give Harry something instead of just kind of looking like a buffoon the entire movie. Because at first it was like, meh, business guy, and then it's depressed guy, and then it's sad guy, and then the movie's over. It just, they didn't really do much for Harry Osborn to make him look strong or credible. If they were going to do something in the third movie, and well, we know what we got.
Isn't it crazy that we have something like the MCU where you can have a movie starring almost every single character, including Spider-Man, after a certain point, but then in this movie they struggled to have two characters? And I'm not knocking the movie, because really it wasn't normal for movies to have so many different villains. I guess you can go back to Superman, right, during the 90s, Batman I should say, during the 90s. And
hey,
what happened
we had
when you introduced
Two-Face and the Riddler. I didn't think about that one for a second.
They did Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy and
so we
Bane.
Have a good example and a bad example.
Yeah. But yeah, but
I don't
it
know,
doesn't
man.
Always work.
When's the last time you saw Batman Forever? I don't you know.
No, I know, but think recently. About the fact think about the fact
it's
that even
good.
Before that you had the original one, you had Batman
and you think
Returns.
They did it well?
We're going to have to eventually do that. You know what?
Well, I was saying, Keith, and you think they did that well or not in Forever?
Forever, just in case, just so I don't screw this up, Forever's the one with Two-Face and the Riddler. Or is
yes.
that? Okay, yeah, that one is good. The one with
really?
Mr. Freeze and
Batman
Poison
and
Ivy is, that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Speaking, I want to share something that I laughed out loud so much I had to pause this movie. The bank scene where Doc Ock is conveniently stealing just as Peter is with Aunt May. Things start happening and Peter runs off. Aunt May just yells, Peter,
yeah.
Don't leave me.
He just
running
goes.
Off.
By the way, we totally kind of glossed over it. Aunt May in that scene, how did her heart just not give out on her when she's hanging from the side of a building? Like, how does this 80-year-old lady have the ability to take her little umbrella and hook it to the side of a building?
Yeah, I know, right? Basically, Peter was completely banking on the fact that Aunt May was able to hook her umbrella. Otherwise, she's just straight up dead right there.
And I love that they do a close-up. Once again, everything about Aunt May is just hilarious to me. When Peter sees that she has been kidnapped by Doc Ock, they do this close-up, and then there's Aunt May with the umbrella. But she's not even scared in that close-up. She's kind of just like, Peter, I'm on top of a building. Can you help me out? It's like, you're freaking on top of a building. I'd be crying or something. Oh, man, what the hell's wrong with you?
And how did they have a relationship after that? Like, Peter, you left me and the octopus man almost killed me. Why did you abandon me, you terrible nephew?
She's very forgiving. I think, Keith, the moral of the Spider-Man 2 story is that doesn't matter if you caused the death of a family member. Doesn't matter if a villain is robbing a bank and you leave me alone.
She took her husband's death quite well.
Yeah,
managed to bounce back from this. Like, is Aunt May the real sociopath of this movie?
Oh my goodness.
See, I actually think in the first movie, they did a bad job of Aunt May, like, coping with the death of her husband. In this one, I think you see they did a better job of how that affected her life.
Keith, can you check something quickly?
Absolutely.
While Ryan and I talk here, while we stall, can you check if Spider-Man 1 and 2 have the same writer?
I'm
really curious about this. I will assume so, but something that I feel happened, and Ryan, I would love to get your feedback. It's almost like they realize, oh crap, we did this in the first movie. We didn't really love it that much. Like, Mary Jane didn't know Peter Parker enough in the first one, but we kind of got to make it seem like she did for the second one. So she freaking loves him despite the fact that she barely knew his name in the first one. Did you feel there was a disconnect in the story between the characters, especially MJ and Peter?
It definitely felt like they were trying to make up for maybe some of the misses in the first movie. And I think they did do a pretty good job of cleaning that up in those two particular aspects for sure.
And just to answer your question from earlier, there is a different writer between 1 and 2 where minus the Stan Lee and Steve Ditko Marvel writing credits, I'm probably going to screw this up, David Coep is responsible for Spider-Man 1, and there's a team of four writers for Spider-Man 2. And the original guy wasn't on the team, according to IMDb.
So it definitely makes a lot of sense. And you know what? Whatever, it happens a lot. You look at Iron Man, you know, we had two different war machines, and that was a contractual thing. But I think in these movies that are so dense and they're bound to have changes. You kind of have to just look. You know, we talked about Batman. Think about how many Batmans we had in the same arc, you know, of the stories. Ryan, would you recommend somebody watch Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, if you're interested in pre-MCU superhero movies and you haven't really dove into them, that this is one of the best superhero movies, if not the best superhero movie that you can watch in the era pre-Christopher Nolan's Batman series, basically. That I think this, if you were to look at superhero movies from, you know, some of the early 90s Batmans to all the way up to this movie, then this is about as good as it gets for that era of like late 80s through up to the early 2000s. And then things, I think, take a much more grounded, darker approach. Some do it better than others. And then MCU, you see how they found their groove. And now there's really a lot of people can talk about like an MCU formula, if you will. So if you're interested in this particular era of superhero movies, then I think this is worth watching. And if you're a Spider-Man fan in general and you haven't seen this movie, then what the hell are you doing? Because for the Tobey Maguire series, this is as good as it gets. I'm fairly confident. I don't think my mind's going to be changed for the next one.
And that's where we disagree still, because I still think one is better. And while I do agree with you, Ryan, that there is some credit and some reason to go and watch the pre-MCU Spider-Man stuff, my recommendation of last time of just watch the beginning of Spider-Man 1, get up to the point where Spider-Man quote-unquote kills the guy that murdered Uncle Ben, get to that point and then just go watch Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, I don't think this movie adds anything beyond the high that was that part of the movie. Like, everything that happens in this movie, I think it's an all right movie. I will say, I've spent a lot of time kind of poo-pooing this movie. I think it's good, but I don't think it hits any point as good as the beginning of Spider-Man 1. That like we talked about during the first one, that point of the beginning of the movie up until Uncle Ben dies, I think is some of the best Spider-Man movie screen time ever, and I don't think this movie reaches that, so it's probably better. Watch that, go watch the MCU version, Spider-Man Homecoming, and that's how you're getting the best 2019 Spider-Man experience.
I'm not going to say that I would absolutely recommend somebody watch this movie, but I guess I'm sort of in the middle where even though, and I think this is good that we're a three-man podcast, you guys definitely disagree on the movie, even though I think that Peter Parker is still a bad character in this one, I objectively think this was a better movie than the first one. And something that we didn't get to a lot, because it's maybe a more boring conversation, is the cinematography. I thought that the first one, and I mentioned it in the review, it didn't feel like it was shot like a superhero movie. It felt like a regular movie with some action scenes. But this one definitely felt like they did try some things. We talked about the fact that Peter Parker is awkward, and they doubled down, and every now and then, it was actually really good. Like the part where he said, I'm back, when he's jumping, he did the Neo jump, right? Like the Matrix, but then he falls, breaks his back. And then like, there's that awkward moment of just him going like, oh, and then the elevator scene where he's going down, talking about the fact that it itches in the crotch area.
Yeah, that was actually good. I like that one.
Yeah. Like
there was some legitimately funny moments.
Yeah. And to me, especially now that we know, you know, what Tom Holland has done, I think that's why this Spider-Man, the current iteration of Spider-Man, has been so successful. Because I think the magic of Peter Parker, maybe not in the comic books, but definitely on the big screen, is not about how awkward he is. It's like he's aware he's awkward, but there's a likable personality behind that. That, yeah, man, you suck. You fell off a freaking building, but I like you, though. You're kind of just like a human being at the end of the day. And I think it does have to do with the genuine human emotions. And I still stand by the fact that Tobey Maguire's not great. You know, going back to when he divorced the Spider-Man character, he does do some dance moves that we are definitely going to see more of on the third one. But then the other thing we got to bring up, I mean, we're talking about freaking Spider-Man 2. There was a meme born when we go to the Daily Bugle and we see the infamous laugh when a little something happens. Keith, can you pull the Jameson laugh? Can you try it?
Oh, that's a hard one. The ha 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 ha. Oh, that's belly
more
laugh.
Like it's more
you gotta break
like,
your
it's
neck.
It's got
doing
like
it.
A hiss to it, like a I can't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like
what was that?
It's got like a wheeze in it,
yeah,
you know?
That's tough.
Once again,
sorry, Kat.
Once again, Jameson, by far the best character,
yes,
in this entire movie, still steals every single scene that he's in. I love it to death. I love his character to death.
Allow me to retract one thing that I said earlier. Go watch the first bit of Spider-Man 1, then skip ahead to that scene where Jameson is in the Spider-Man suit, and then go watch Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, wait. You saw, I got to mention, you watched the extended cut of this movie, my friend. That was not part of the original
one. I was going to say,
really?
I don't remember that.
Okay, because I accidentally watched the extended cut of this because when I went through the opening credits, I saw it said Spider-Man 2.1. And I'm like, what? Is there version numbers on this movie? And then, sure enough, that was the extended version of the film. Really? That Jameson scene isn't in the...
Nope. No.
Wow, that was one of the
but
best
you know
parts
what?
Of
hey,
the movie.
More Jameson makes the movie better. And I like that he was in this movie a little bit more than the first one. So... They knew what to do. Yeah, I rented it on Amazon Prime, and it was just the regular version. So,
yeah, I saw it on Google Play.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see that scene.
But everybody, we are going to be talking about Spider-Man 3 next month. So,
buckle
I am
up.
So curious because, okay, so this isn't a sport, but if we're keeping score... For the first one, the three of us were kind of like, the first one's like, it's a movie. It happened. This one, I feel like we definitely have more concrete opinions where Ryan's at the top. I'm definitely up there. It's just like Tobey Maguire's acting, not for me. And then Keith is definitely at the bottom. I don't even know. How can Keith review Spider-Man 3, Ryan? Can he even do that?
See,
I'm afraid of this.
This is the way I look at it. And honestly, from this point of view, I think that Spider-Man 2 might be more disappointing than 3, because going back, I know 3 is a bad movie. When I was watching Spider-Man 2, I kind of had a glimmer of hope. Like, I remember enjoying this movie. Maybe it was better than Spider-Man 1, and I just didn't remember it correctly. But going back and through this experience, I could say that it was disappointing. Spider-Man 2 disappointed me with how it was, and it wasn't as good as I remembered it. I know 3 sucks. I'm probably going to have a lot of fun with that, because we all know 3 sucks and we can laugh at it together.
And I think that something we always have to consider is that when we review a video game or a movie, we're reviewing it in the year that we're talking about it. It would be very easy and almost cheap in a way to be, oh, well, Ryan, but we loved it in 2000, whenever the hell this came out. You know, the first one came out 2002. Oh, that's great. I think the real purpose is like, is it worth watching? How many Marvel movies do we have now? Let's be real. We got over
20, right?
It would
be impossible to review this movie without the lens of the MCU at this point.
Yeah, and not even just that. It's like, you already have like over 5 Spider-Man movies to watch. So say that somebody was listening to us and is going like, okay, if I were to watch one, which one would it be? Which for me right now, it would be Into the Spider-Verse and then the Tom Holland ones.
I will Homecoming, put these, baby. I'd still say Homecoming.
I'm with Juan. Into the Spider-Verse is better, but they're both great movies.
Exactly, but see, it's like a battle of 2 awesome movies. So guess what? If one is watched over the other one, I don't care. They're still great.
Good.
Yeah, then I would put these, and then I would put the Garfield movies. I always forget his first name, Andrew Garfield, right?
I still never saw those.
Have we got a pig in Spider-Verse?
So wait, would you put both Andrew Garfield movies over Spider-Man 2?
No, I will put them below, because I feel like these movies have a defined thing, whereas those movies tried to be sequels of this. I feel like the character is not different enough, whereas Tom Holland created his own Spider-Man, right? Created his own Peter Parker. You look at Into the Spider-Verse, that's its own Spider-Man and its own Peter Parker. So I really do love to see things like that, which just as a food for thought for everybody that is a superhero fan, imagine the next Iron Man movie without the Tony Stark that we have now, Robert Downey Jr. And it's hard to do that, right? I think that whenever you talk about a superhero movie, you have to ask yourself, remove the actor and remove that main person playing that character. Is it still as magical? I think Tobey Maguire is second fiddle to the overall Spider-Man movies. But I just wanted to quickly bring up some interesting facts. So Doc Ock was originally supposed to be in the first movie. I think we may have mentioned this previously, but it is interesting, right? That we were talking about a lot of characters, yet he was supposed to be in that one. The train sequence was storyboarded during the first movie, so Sam Raimi already had that in mind, which has to be very satisfying, as you mentioned, Ryan. Easily one of the most iconic films.
I'm glad they saved it, because, I mean, Doc Ock didn't even get a ton of screen time in this movie as the villain, so I couldn't imagine how watered down it would have been like alongside Green Goblin in the first movie.
Yeah. So everybody, let us know what you thought about Spider-Man 2 by going to Twitter, Cast of the Past. We also do have the Instagram page. We're doing something pretty awesome there. So say there's a video game or a movie we haven't had a chance to get to, we do 1-minute reviews. So right now, if you go there, Ryan talks about Zombies Ate My Neighbors from the Super Nintendo. I talk about a Zombieland Double Tap and my concerns about that. Keith talks about, what did you talk about, Keith?
I forgot Mario already. Maker, right?
Yeah, he talked about Mario Maker.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah, really, he talked about his cat primarily. But hey, if you want to see Keith's cat, you can go to A Cast to the Past on Instagram.
Not A Cat to the Past.
No. That's a whole new podcast.
Okay, Keith, before this episode airs, you are making A Cat to the Past an account, okay? You got to make that happen, man.
That's work. You gotta Can make you that just happen. Do it for me?
I already do the Instagram, damn it. But if you enjoy the podcast, please, I mentioned it at the top of the show, consider leaving that 5-star review. You can easily review on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and even Facebook. That goes a long way into helping the podcast. We also do have a Discord channel at acastofthepast.com/Discord. And the last thing, rate your Spider-Man movies. So if you were to do Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, go to Twitter, let us know what you think about those. And up until next time, we will be back with a lot more on A Cast
to the
Past.
Keith, you have a great cat. It's a he, right?
Yeah, it's a he. He's had a great sleep behind me. Like, for the video version, look at that thing. He's so... where's my thumb? He's so calm.
Thumb's there, Keith.
Yeah, he's so calm. Relaxed.
Is he upside down?
He is upside down. It's he adorable. Sleeps like a human being. Like, his chin's... or the top of his head is on the bed.
Is that how you sleep, Ryan? Hey, Ryan. Hey, we're not ending this right now. So we forgot to mention this. You took me out on a date, man. When the hell were we going to bring this up?
Yeah, and you didn't invite me.
Yeah,
so. We already said our outro.
No, I don't care. This is part of the show.
This is happening after the music on my version.
I can end this episode whenever I want.
This is after the cast. No, but I was in Massachusetts last week, and I was about an hour and a half away from Ryan, so... We actually hung out in Boston, man. What you think about that? You got to date me.
Got him some banana pudding. Took him out to a nice romantic Italian dinner. Walked along the ocean. It was very romantic. We saw some sea lions. I think I always get sea lions and seals mixed up, but I'm pretty sure they're sea lions.
Aren't lions the one with the whiskers?
Yeah, I think they were sea lions.
Cool story, bro.
All right. I'm stopping.